How about?
We can go on to item 40 then.
40, DEO report.
Okay, in the executive officer's report, item 40, we have the water quality certifications at the start of the report. Are there any questions on those? Okay. On page 4, now this is an unusual report, I guess. I can't actually remember when we've provided such a report before on septic management throughout the region. Sorrel Marks put together a nice summary of the situation in the different counties. And, you know, I think it's noteworthy, for example, San Luis Obispo County does not have a septic management plan. There are no facilities within the county for the treatment or disposal of septic. And, of course, that's one of the reasons that we were emphasizing that as a need in the basin plan amendment with the on-site management plans. So I think I thought the report was kind of eye-opening. And are there any questions on that report? Another thing that Sorrel did that you don't typically see is she included Kern County. It's not commonly recognized that we have little pieces of Kern County up along the ridge. But we actually have more of Kern County in our region than we have of San Mateo County. That is an exciting bit of trivia, which maybe we will we'll use that at the holiday party tomorrow night. So those of you in the audience
take a field trip.
Are at an advantage.
To Kern County.
Yeah.
So if there are no other questions on that one. The next up, Allison Jones provided an update on the irrigated agriculture program. And one of the noteworthy items is that it's coming around on the old guitar again, as they say, and that's going to expire, is it July next year? So we have been in the throes of rolling out the process for updating that irrigated ag order. Because we're getting down to the wire in terms of putting that together and having it on a timeline to be able to adopt or bring to you for consideration in July. Also, we covered toxicity and pesticide issues.
I have a question on the irrigated ag.
I'm still on that.
Oh, you are?
Okay.
That's part of it? Okay, go ahead. I'll wait.
Well, I was just going to point out that part of what Allison covered was toxicity and pesticide issues. And we had some questions from the board, and they were covered in the Q&A document.
Right.
Oh.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to read through those yet.
No.
That's understandable. If you have more time this evening to read through those, and if you have more questions tomorrow, we could cover those tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, maybe Allison and or Karen could be here tomorrow. You also had questions on the food safety aspect of it, so the same thing would apply there.
Okay. The question I have has to do with the status on enforcement actions, not against violators for failing to pay their fee or their program fee, but enforcement against operators that have failed to enroll in the program. And I know the last time we had an update, it sounded as though that portion or that phase of work was coming along and would have come up by now. So I don't, to my memory, I don't think we've seen any enforcement actions against those who have failed to enroll in the program. Is that correct?
No,
yes, we have.
Yeah.
Yes, we have.
One is set for tomorrow, which is the one we just took off.
Is that agro?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I guess there were four others that the staff did bring enforcement actions against, and they agreed to settle.
Okay.
So it just didn't come to a hearing.
Yeah, I didn't make that connection.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the five. Is that the five that are being referred to in this sentence?
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Well, let's see. Which sentence? Oh, right. I see it. Yes.
Yeah. Working to resolve the five administrative civil liability
complaints.
Okay.
Right. So as of just a little while ago, all five of those have settled.
Okay. That is good to hear. That is a question. The reason I bring it up is it is a question that is posed to me both in the course of work here, but also in just talking with folks in the community that are watching how the progress of that program is going. I feel the program is very successful in many ways, and I think the collaborative base of that, you know, has demonstrated how important it is to work in a voluntary method or process, but people are also anxious to see that folks that aren't cooperating or come into the process in the right way.
Can I add on to that? I'm glad you brought that up, because I actually meant to mention something about those five, so thanks for reminding me. These were the first enforcement actions for those kind of cases. We have a lot more non-enrollees. The enforcement policy actually says it's a good way to go to select a few, and then hopefully you can advertise the results of that and achieve a greater level of compliance with the remaining population, that whatever the violation is. So one of the things we want to do now that we have settlements on these five is advertise that. Not just with our, we always have a news release after each board meeting. Sometimes we get to play on that in papers, sometimes we don't. We want to go further with that and actually work with the region-wide Ag Coalition so that they can help us to advertise that, send information to the farm bureaus, the Ag Commissioners, and any other ways we can to make sure that the word gets out that this is serious. And the other thing I want to mention is that the first five, of course, we have separation of functions on these things. So as it says here, Michael Thomas, as the assistant executive officer, issued the complaint. Harvey Packard heads up the enforcement team. And Francis and I are advisors to the board. When they get a proposed settlement, it's up to us to decide whether it's appropriate to settle. The board has authorized me up to an amount of $300,000 as far as settlements go. My feeling is that with these kind of violations, we should be escalating the enforcement. And so what I mean by that is I would be looking for amounts that would be higher to recommend to you. You know, the enforcement team has to do with what they feel is appropriate. But I think in terms of what we want to advise you as far as what's acceptable, I would be looking for escalation with the idea that this is the first round, people should be getting the idea, and we shouldn't have to be going back to folks and have them, you know, plead ignorance as far as not being aware of the program. So that's the word I wanted to get out to you, that I don't think it should remain status quo and we just keep chipping away. We should be escalating.
Let me ask one more question. In addition to the penalties, the fines, can you characterize across the five, were there other conditions that are in those settled agreements as to the actions that they have to take at this point?
Well, the main thing was that they had to pay their fees. There's the state board fee. There's the monitoring fee. They have, as you might recall, everyone has the opportunity of either individual monitoring, which no one has chosen, or participating in the region-wide cooperative monitoring program. That requires each one to contribute a fee to the coalition with Preservation, Inc., the nonprofit that runs that monitoring program. So they're required to pay that fee. They have to commit to, if they haven't followed through with the education requirements, which is, I think, the case with all five of these, they have to do that. They just have to do everything that they're behind on. I don't recall that there are any other conditions. Unless I'm forgetting something, Harvey.
Harvey Packard's staff, there's actually four main ones. They have to submit their NOIs, enroll, they have to pay the monitoring fees, they have to have the water quality plan their management plan, and they have to do their education. So those are the four things that we're looking for.
But those are what they're supposed to do. So
right.
there aren't other additional factors in the settlements aside from the settlement penalty.
I can add a little bit. If we were going to have that hearing tomorrow, we had a couple slides that really got into detail as far as what we were doing with enforcement. But if I can remember the numbers, we've sent about 1,300 initial enforcement letters to those who we thought should be enrolled. So either they needed to tell us that they weren't eligible and didn't have to enroll, or they need to submit their notice of enrollment. And after that, we sent follow-up notices of violation to about 85, I think. And of those 85, we took the top five and sent complaints for liability. So that's where we are, and we're continue to work on that process.
What was the top five? The largest or the?
It was a combination of largest in terms of acreage and monitoring fees owed.
I'm sorry, what was the second?
Fees that were owed.
Oh.
Right. But even then, we weren't sure because we didn't know exactly how many acres they had. We base these on how many acres we think they have until we get the actual information from them to know how many they have. In one case, one of the farms actually had a lot more acres than we knew or thought that they did. So their fees were actually a lot more than we had anticipated.
Thanks for filling in on that. Let's see. So the next part here was the food safety update. Like I said, we provided some more answers on that in the Q&A document. And again, maybe tomorrow you will have had a chance to read that more carefully. The next item starts on page 9, the status of the Municipal Stormwater Regulation Program. And we have our table, which should look somewhat familiar to you, with the overall schedule for enrolling the Phase 2 communities, the many Phase 2 communities. And it's been, you know, we've had bumps in the road, certainly, but we are moving along and making progress. I think the Lompoc hearing was very beneficial in terms of helping to clarify requirements, most notably with the hydro modification requirements, which the board will recall has been a very high priority, along with low impact development. Just yesterday afternoon, we had pretty much all afternoon meeting with a subgroup that was San Luis Obispo County itself, and then all the cities in San Luis Obispo County that are subject to Phase 2 requirements. And in addition, the city of Santa Maria. And the main focus of that meeting was the aspect of post-construction management control measure, part of the stormwater management plan. And within that measure, the focus was hydro modification. I think it's clear that more municipalities are on board with the concept of just low-impact development, you know, low-impact development features. But with hydro modification, it causes a bit more angst in terms of our 1 year. You'll recall that we, from the Lompoc permit or the approval of the stormwater management plan, we clarified that what we're talking about as far as the 1 year amount of time, which provides some flexibility to develop those hydro modification controls, which is necessary for the protection of the creeks that receive the runoff from developed and redeveloped areas. But I think the meeting was pretty successful in terms of narrowing the differences, creating a better understanding. And this group was, it was a little unusual, I guess, in that the meeting was actually organized by the city manager for the city of San Luis Obispo. It was the second such meeting we've had with this group. And I think that was helpful because we've been, in terms of the stormwater program and our staff, we work more closely with you know, public works staff, the technical staff that are involved with it, the people who make funding decisions or funding recommendations to the city council, like the city managers, have been much less involved. They've only been getting little slivers of information, and sometimes it's negative. So we had several city managers there, as well as their technical staff. It was a pretty big group. It was close to 30 people, something like that. And so I think it was helpful in terms of giving us an opportunity to provide an overview of what we mean by hydrant modification controls. Dominic Rock of our staff provided that overview and did a really good job. And it really helped clarify that for some of the decision makers who are in a position of making recommendations to their city councils or board of supervisors. And as they pointed out, you know, these are about the worst economic times any of us have ever seen. And it's a tough sell to say they have to spend so much money on some of these things, when, especially if they don't have a good understanding of what the benefits are. So that was part of the positive outcome from the meeting, I think. You want to add anything to that, Michael?
Well, one of the things that we talked about was having the municipalities prioritize the work that they're doing in these stormwater programs. And I think because of these economic times, they're going to have to do that to a level they haven't done it before. So internally, we're thinking about what are the highest priority things. Is it street sweeping? Is it radio ads? Or is it development? Should we be focusing on redesigning and planning and design for future developments and hydro modification? And that's what we're focused on. So we're going to help them prioritize those various tasks, considering the economics.
Are you guys doing this for other areas of the region?
We have met with, or Roger has met with, municipalities from other parts of the region. This was in response to a request from the local municipalities. So, yes, we have. But I'm not sure, Roger, I wasn't at the other meetings, but I don't know if you got into the same level of detail at those meetings that you did in this one.
Well, of course, it was a little bit different discussion. But we met with the Southern Group. Where are we here? I think it was around March, April. And then we went up north and met with the Northern Group. One of the reasons that these people asked us to come and talk to them was really an outgrowth. You remember a lot of these same municipalities were actually at the Lompoc hearing. Remember, we had a lot of people addressing the board. And so I think that was one of the reasons we ended up with this meeting. We had actually encouraged people to work together where it makes sense. And with San Luis Obispo, they already had the SLO partners, water quality partners. And so they've already had a kind of a loose coalition to try to capitalize on helping each other. And that was one of the things they emphasized, is that they need to do a better job of coordinating and taking advantage of different products that different municipalities have developed. So, and we talked about ways that could be done. We also talked a lot about how it would be a good idea to not only look, you know, within San Luis Obispo County or even within the region, but elsewhere in the state where they've already covered this ground. One of their beefs is that we're pushing them harder than Phase 1 communities. And so we pointed out that hydro modification controls, like I said, that was really the crux of the meeting, mm-hmm. Have been established, and we had examples, and that means that information is available. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. And one of the people from San Luis Obispo County, who was the technical person, was saying that in a lot of cases where they're doing modeling, they're coming up with very similar results for communities up and down the state. And so, you know, it makes sense to, mm-hmm. to use that information.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was particularly interested in your comment that telling folks why this is good for them, because I hear a lot of crying up in Monterey, and it seems to me that people don't understand, that they only see it as some sort of requirement for them to spend a lot of money they don't want to spend, and they're not getting anything out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the attitude, and I think maybe When you said that, I thought, gee, I certainly hope there's a way to tell the folks up north that they're actually getting something out of it, or what the good of it is. Or,
tell them tomorrow.
I thought, maybe there's some way to. Yeah.
It's very difficult for them to see past, for municipalities to see past, whoever it is, the city manager or whoever, to see past having to go to the city council and say, I need more money than I said than I thought I did.
Well, I think maybe we need to make that case, in a more proactive way.
And I think, although we may see the linkages between LID and water supply, that it seems obvious to us, but you certainly see the aha light bulb go off when you expand that discussion to get that bigger picture going, when they see the extent to which they're trying to milk every system they've got to protect their water supply. So I think, I think my questions at a previous hearing were like, where are we seeing the literature on the benefits, and how is that, where's the evidence coming up that you can rely on? I think that's another dimension, is that we're hopefully seeing the literature mm-hmm. grow in that direction, and you're not going to be the only source of this message coming at them.
It is growing. There was a relatively recent publication by the State Board on their website about the benefits of low impact development, hydro modification controls. Not just the benefits, but the necessity. Yeah. And you'll recall that you, as a board, provide steered funding towards establishment of the Central Coast Low Impact Development Center. And Darla Inglis was able to attend this meeting yesterday and introduce herself to people, although she's actually already met many of those players, but nevertheless offer her assistance. And one of the things that she talked about was the idea that it's not just an added program or a task, and that's the way a lot of people tend to think of it. Here's this new, different thing that is a task and a budget drain that's required. What she was pointing out is that, they have to permit any kind of land development proposal anyway. They have tons of requirements for any kind of permitting that they do, and it's a matter of integrating, whether it's hydro modification or low impact development, into that permitting process, and just morphing it so that they're covering it. And they were talking about, well, gee, we have smart growth to worry about, and we have LID to worry about. Those should be integrated, one and the same. So I thought it was very helpful to have her there.
Do the rest of you see any need or opportunity for the board to maybe get involved with some of these municipalities and approach them with some kind of presentation?
I would love to see something like that.
On the level of the elected officials mm-hmm. and trying to, convince them or show mm-hmm. them why this is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the electeds and the city managers would be a good sort of focus.
Decision makers.
Yeah. They're the decision makers. They're the ones that have to, answer the constituents' questions. And
how can we do that?
Can we hold a workshop and invite them? I don't know.
Or I think the chances of getting city
them.
Council people to travel anywhere.
No, I mean, you're slim. I mean, you can do it through Amtrak.
Right. Yeah, it's a thing. You pretty much have to be in the neighborhood, I think.
Oh, definitely.
What if we were to go to them?
That's what I said. Hold one up north and.
But I mean,
you're talking one on one.
One on one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have to do that. I mean, you can. But
yeah.
I was thinking maybe you could hold one workshop sort of. Invite the neighborhood.
And I think that would be great if we could get them to it. That would be, and if we go to them, then they have very little reason not to hear us out and listen to us.
Mm-hmm. I would be willing to take on an assignment.
In that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. How about you, Mr. Jeffries?
Absolutely.
Good. I was a little afraid.
Okay.
The latter half of what you were going to say.
Well, I just
maybe I'm, you know, I look at a little different perspective because being an old mayor of a city that I understand probably both sides of the spectrum of this particular issue. And when you get to, when you're a decision maker and you're looking at where your priorities are as far as funding, and of course with the economy the way it is today, a lot of cities and counties really haven't felt the real pinch yet because of the property taxes that are being reevaluated. And I know what's happening because I chair Tax Appeals Board for Monterey County, and the assessor is doing that. But the other thing is the majority of the money not only comes from property tax for cities, but it also comes through sales tax. And if people don't have money to spend in their local communities, there isn't enough sales tax generated for those communities to be able to have the due programs. And so then it becomes a pecking order of what do you do? Do you, you know, you get back to the issue of fire, police, libraries, public works, you know, tree trimming and all those things that make a city work. And it's very difficult for decision makers because on one hand, your constituency in your community is telling you, I want my sidewalks fixed or I want the libraries open or I want more police officers, I want more of this. And for them to be able to turn around and say, well, geez, you know, we got to spend X many thousands or millions of dollars on stormwater. And they'll say, well, what stormwater? We don't have any storms. We haven't any rain to speak of in this particular area. So it's a selling point that we have to be able to lay it out dollars and cents-wise. And not only do the decision makers get it from the constituents, where they really get hit hard is from the developers. Because the developers don't want to pay any more than they absolutely have to. And a lot of times the cities and the counties will pass these fees on to the development community. And then they get hammered at a public meeting, now we can't provide affordable housing because you're adding all these additional fees, whether it's for traffic, stormwater, etc. And so it's a really delicate issue to be able to pass this type of thing on and make everybody understand. And I think maybe Gary could chime in on this, but in our northern region, they have an association of government agencies, which is called AMBAG in our particular area, where all the cities participate in it as well as the county. Now, that may be a forum that we can give a presentation to. Because all the members on that agency are all city council, either mayors or city council members or board of supervisors members. And we get that type of information. It's a starting point. But you have to be able to show them what dollar and cents benefit it is to those particular legislative people, that elected people, because then they can give direction to their city manager. Then they can justify that to their constituents that this is the benefit. You're going to have clean water. You're going to have better groundwater or better drinking water or whatever it happens to be. And
So you'll participate? Absolutely.
After I gave that 1 hour dissertation of what's two sides of the coin? Yes, I'll be more than happy to...
Gary, would you and John want to participate?
Well, you know, I'd be happy to, but I think what's really important is to have staff there who can answer, you know, the really hard questions.
I think what we need is staff to put together a PowerPoint presentation for us to use.
That would be perfect.
And then we have a staff person from the program. It doesn't have to be Roger or...
Yeah.
It can be someone who can help us with questions.
In San Luis Obispo County, I think LAFCO might be something similar to AMBAG.
Well, we have LAFCO, too, in our area. LAFCO is a smaller group because, I don't know about this county, but Monterey County has two people represent the city, a couple from the Board of Supervisors, and then you have a couple from special districts and one at large. So you're not really reaching the
broad spectrum of elected officials. ANBAG has a member from every city
mm-hmm.
in Monterey County
mm-hmm.
Involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a way to go.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we have maybe staff tell us two things. The bigger groups, you know, where we have a big audience, like ANBAG, and then those permittees or upcoming permittees that maybe we could help educate that are going to be somewhat challenging for us. And that might be more of a one-on-one. And, you know, we just kind of do it as we can do it with our schedules.
Well, I think possibly, I don't know, France is going to step in here and say we may have a conflict or...
I just want to remind you that there are pending matters before the board,
yeah,
and speaking
yeah.
directly with those
well,
about
right.
those matters would be.
I was going to suggest, because
so.
I was thinking of the same thing that you were going to bring up, that if you want to structure the meeting is that, for instance, if you have it in Monterey County, if Gary and I were there and we kind of just kicked the issue off and not really just in general, then the staff would do the presentation and be able to answer all the questions. I think that would be an impact just for having board members there and not make any decisions or say we're going to do this or we're going to do that, but we hear the information instead of the board members doing the presentation, but be there.
I don't think we have to decide how this is going to look right
no,
now.
No, I don't know. But
yeah, let's,
yeah.
Maybe we should just move on. Yeah,
we'll talk and see what might be possible.
Legally, what we can do.
And I think even if our presentation is general in nature and not specific to any one discharge, you know, if we keep it up here instead of with the specifics, perhaps, you know, we can get away with them.
Well, and another thing, too, is you can publicly notice the meeting. And
okay.
and if it's recorded, then that can, you know,
okay.
help with dealing with the ex parte
issue. Yeah, that's another way.
Yeah.
Even though normally, if you have two board members, you don't have to have a public notice, yeah. but just to.
Because our intent would not be to engage in anything specific, because the board's not going to know anything about it.
Right.
Yeah. And so we would try to defer anything.
Yeah. We'll talk and figure out what you can do. And I appreciate your willingness to try to help out. And one of the things I want to mention is, Mr. Jeffries, I think you were pointing out that we need to tell them about the benefits in order to convince them that they do need to spend the money or bite the bullet and implement the program. And while we do always try to point out the benefits and why it's
yeah.
good for them, recharge, for example, or a water short region, you know, in a lot of cases, there are examples of low-impact development actually increasing the value of neighborhoods and making the properties more attractive. All, you know, tons of benefits. But the point I want to make is it is a regulatory program. And the bottom line is they need to comply with the stormwater permit.
Well,
so
the point I was trying to make is
it's not like we're trying to sell them a pair of shoes.
I know? Understand that. But we have to sell them on the idea instead of
it helps. Instead
of going in with a sledgehammer and saying,
right.
This is mandatory, you're going to have to do it whether you like it or not.
Right.
It's better if we can get them to buy in as best as we possibly can. And if we have that, it'll make a lot easier.
Absolutely.
For all of us. And
we just don't want to forget the part about being regulators.
We don't forget that at all.
Okay.
You're both right. What we're trying to do is to get them open to the idea and to be somewhat receptive to the message,
absolutely,
which is to some degree a one-way message. You've got to do these things.
Yeah, and that's part of what we talked about yesterday. So,
one thought before we leave stormwater that I had after the last after Longpokes Swamp, I thought went fairly well, and I thought that staff really did a good job in kind of coming up to speed with at least what we've been concerned about for some time. And I had a flash that perhaps we could back off some of the annual reviews we had been asking to come before the board until staff can catch up and get all of them issued. you know, we've got a backlog, and we've got limited staff. And so, you know, they're trying to do something which is wouldn't normally happen. We wouldn't normally see a five-year permit come up before the board within the five-year period. It would be at the end of 5 years when it's going to be up for renewal. So it was just a thought I had that, you know, perhaps we could back off until staff has caught up with the backlog, and then we could, you know, start to look at a few of these important ones again.
Well, I agree with you, Mr. Chair, except that the issue that I've experienced historically is lots of times if we don't continue to look at them, then what happens, we get to the fifth year and they haven't really done anything or put anything together.
Yeah.
And then they're here again asking for another 5 years or whatever happened to be permit time. And I'm not speaking just about stormwaters. I mean, in general. That, and I don't want to overwhelm the staff, nor do I want to overwhelm the board, because it's a lot of board time for us and a lot of reading material. But I think in some cases that we need to review some of these to make sure that they're up and going. And then once, you know, the staff and we're satisfied, then we can back off from it.
We would not be dropping our review. What the chair is talking about is not having so many presentations
to the
board.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, which does take significantly more time.
Because it takes a lot of time for your staff to prepare for these.
Plus. Right. And so we'd rather be using that time towards advancing the enrollments, getting going with the programs, and actually reviewing the reports.
I think, Roger, if we just picked a few of these to review, the word would get out that we're looking at them and might get other people's attention.
Yeah, one of the exceptions that we said we would follow through with in talking with the chair was we had already started a more in-depth review of the Santa Barbara County Stormwater Management Plan, and that's scheduled for completion here, I think, in the next month. And so we intend to bring that back to the board. But
they were audited, too.
I guess our thought was we've had a lot of these reports coming to the to the board, and that hopefully you do have that level of confidence that we're on the right track.
Well, I would think, and that's the reason I said it doesn't have to be all of them. I would think that the staff would key us in that we need to look at this one or that one or whatever it happens to be.
What I was envisioning is that we would continue to keep you informed in terms of those annual reports that have come in, any problems that we've seen, but more in the way of a written report like this. It would be more of a summary as opposed to the full-blown dog and pony show, and that's what tends to take a lot more time.
But yeah, it takes a lot of time.
But it does help us, you know. I can see that, you know, staff will put more time into something, obviously, when it's going to come before us. We're going to question staff and question the discharge and really start to peel away everything. You know, I think that really helps in the review itself. And if staff is not going to have to roll up their sleeves to prepare for that, perhaps they're doing, you know, a lesser effort to still comply with everything, and we may not be picking everything up that we would otherwise. So, I don't know, maybe there's just a couple that we feel very, you know, that are important for us to work on. You know, and maybe some of these others we can just put on the back burner.
Well, if I go,
are there any, Russ, that you feel that? Does it
well, you mentioned Santa Barbara. I was. Well, yeah, that's one I'd really.
Okay. What about Salinas? We've had them almost.
We've
annually.
Had them several times, and
we're still not kind of on track with them. We still have some ideological challenges with them.
Well, they're on the agenda tomorrow.
I know.
For
yeah, we shouldn't be discussing that.
No, we can talk about that. But
could I maybe check with Matt, who heads up our stormwater unit? Matt, what I was thinking is that my understanding is that Jennifer is in the midst of a review for Monterey Regional right now, and that of course covers multiple jurisdictions.
Right.
So I was thinking maybe that would be one. It's from the north. it might make sense. What's your thought about that, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, considering the breadth of the Monterey regional program covers 8 entities, I think that would definitely be a good one to report back on. You've heard a lot from Salinas. I think that might be one you can afford to scale back hearing from. And then, of course, Santa Barbara County, I think, would be another one, a good one to continue reporting back on. But to report back on, say, County of San Luis Obispo, it might be a little bit early. I mean, they're still in their first year of implementing their stormwater plan. So
it seems to me that with Monterey Regional, it covers 8 entities. You've heard a lot from Salinas, and you're going to hear more. And then with having Santa Barbara County, that would probably give you a pretty good flavor for how it's going.
Yeah. What are we doing with San Benito County and Santa Cruz County?
Well, Santa Cruz, they're active, and I can't remember if I mentioned that last time. No, I guess the election has happened in the meantime, but Santa Cruz City, right, had their measure for the revenue, stormwater revenue program. And, you know, this is a big hurdle, talking about money for these programs, and especially with Prop 218 requiring a two-thirds vote, they were successful in passing that ballot measure. And so that was certainly significant in terms of their ability to do a better job with their stormwater management program. But we've got all of them listed here in terms of the schedule, and it's region-wide.
Well, and if I could add to that, Roger, I would summarize that this is a great example of where we need to focus our resources to get these communities enrolled. City of Santa Cruz, County of Santa Cruz, including Capitola, City of Watsonville, and UC Santa Cruz are not enrolled under the Phase 2 general permit yet. Either is the City of Gilroy, the community of San Martin. Hollister is. That's the one San Benito, Santa Clara County exception. So we're thinking that by spending less time preparing updates for you on those MS4s who have already been enrolled, that would allow us to focus more on getting those that don't have any permit coverage enrolled.
So. Morgan Hill is enrolled too.
Correct.
Gary, any important
to
you?
I'm all for it. It sounds good. Less reporting to us, more enrolling.
Okay.
And
would you like to see the Monterey Regional though come back or not? Do you not?
Unless there's some problem with it, I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I think we're more interested in hearing. I mean, I'm more interested. I'm going to say we. I'm more interested in hearing from the folks who are having problems with their program. If they seem to be on track and things are sort of tootling along, then I don't need to hear about that. I mean, except maybe, you know, in a staff report, you know, an update that says they're doing great. But it's the folks who are having trouble stumbling around that I think we need to maybe take a look at. That would be my suggestion.
Can I make an additional suggestion in terms of this discussion and shifting a bit in our strategy and remembering that at each of those hearings, when we requested a hearing at the one-year or first-year
right.
annual report, that we ask Roger to summarize what we've talked about today and so that it becomes a formal part of his EO's report, possibly in January, kind of summarize what we've come up with so that people who are following this issue are on notice, or at least there's an opportunity for them to see there's been a change in strategy, because I think, well, I support the idea, and I think there's good reason for making this change. The fallout from making a change at the late end of a day as part one item in a big long report, people say you didn't tell us and you said you were going to do one thing and then you've changed it and you buried it, you know, in the late afternoon, one afternoon. So I think when we do kind of do a course revision, which is very valuable, we still want to make sure we're our transparency on this and our effort to make sure people are aware that we're going to conduct things a little bit differently than they were left at the hearing on that issue. So that would be my only concern.
And John, how about you? How do you feel about backing off some of the...
I'm fine with it. Okay. Well, like I said, the only thing that should come up is if they're having problems.
Right. And well, I would like to see Santa Barbara come back because you've audited them. And I know we had some issues with what Rob Almey told us. And I'd just like to see how staff has dealt with them and gotten things resolved, make sure we're kind of on track. The only other one I would be interested in would simply be Salinas, unless mm-hmm. the rest of you feel that it's, you know, not necessary. And that's only because, you know, I'd like to see us go through at least a cycle a year with them where mm-hmm. we're kind of seeing eye to eye on everything.
I would support that those two.
Okay.
That's fine with me.
Okay. All right. And then at least...
Can we give Salinas like a couple years or something? It seems like they're here every 3 or 6 months.
You have a stepchild, Gary, that we're just having challenges with.
Yeah.
You know?
Poor guys.
Woodshed time.
Give them time to stumble around and figure things out.
Well, they'll spend enough...
Because they're spending all their time preparing for these hearings, well, I'm telling you right now.
They spend all their money...
That's where all their staff time goes.
All their staff time and all their money and all their consultants to tell us the reason they can't do it when they could put that...
Okay. Yeah, I think we need to not talk about it.
Yeah, okay.
I was biting my lip, Francis.
And then once they're all enrolled, certainly staff is going to let us know once we've completed that momentous point in time. So then we can consider whether we want to add any more annual reports or not.
Yeah.
And hopefully we would just go to a 5-year review when the permit comes up for review.
Yeah, I mean, if I could tell you what our plan is, we kind of see this as phases. Right now we're in this enrollment phase.
Yeah.
And all the staff that are currently dedicated to enrollment
right.
are going to be focusing on that first year of implementation. And
right.
we're not just going to be doing annual report reviews.
Right.
We're going to be doing audits that complement those annual report reviews and essentially doing comprehensive review of all the programs once a year. And so we'll be in a much better position to report back to you in the next
right.
the next year or two.
And that's my concern was you guys are having to spend time reporting back that could be better spent elsewhere. And I think some of these stormwater folks who are being regulated could probably spend more time implementing their program than coming to us and reporting every year.
Okay. Anything else on the EO report?
I want to say that one more time.
Well, you know, I want to remind us, though, that in the case of Salinas, and I'll be trying to be careful here, but the community input to us directly also helped us to realize that we needed to track on it more carefully. So, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, Gary, but in some way we need to recognize
Gary.
The folks who are participating. The folks who are participating in the citizens advisory process brought legitimate concerns and questions to us, and I think this is their only or one of the few places where they can voice those concerns and have the city take it seriously. So I think in part our effort to bring it back was because what we heard from the community was that there are some real problems. So I don't want to overlook that.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think if there are problems, and that's what I'm
right.
saying, if there are problems, we should hear about it.
Right.
But if things are going okie-dokie, we don't need to.
And
that could be problems from our side or from their side.
Right. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Go ahead, Roger. Were you going to say something?
I was going to move on to another topic, so go ahead.
Okay. Just very quickly, I wanted to make a parallel between the stormwater program and renewal of the ag order, which Roger mentioned a few minutes ago. We are gearing up to do that next year. And Harvey mentioned that the focus now is on enrollment, monitoring fees, farm plans, and education. Where we're going with the order is where we've gone with
the municipal program to make it more tangible, more focused on water quality issues, resolving water quality issues, a schedule to do that, and monitoring for results, so verification monitoring. So that's the direction we're going in. So just wanted to let you know to get ready, because it's going to be a big challenge for us and for us as an organization and for farmers as well. So it'll be it's doing the same kind of thing, the same kind of regulatory approach in that program.
I think the effort to become or to establish a systematic and very clearly defined approach is what the dischargers need, because you know the way it was moving forward before, it was very unclear to people what, how the phase, how quickly things would work, and how much change they could anticipate by the time they came up on the list and so forth. So the more we can do to systematize and clarify and kind of be consistent is going to help all of us. Yeah.
Okay. Last thing I want to mention is the very last item in the report, which mentions the budget. I thought that...
we're all getting raises?
I didn't think that. I thought that since the governor called the lame duck legislation back in, that there might be something more to report, but I'm sure, as you all know already, they didn't get very far. So we have the new legislators in, and we don't have any action out of that group yet. But I would be shocked and amazed if we don't have additional general fund cuts. To give you just an overall idea of perspective in terms of the general fund, statewide, the state and the regional boards combined have about 14% of the budget as general fund. We as a regional board have about 18%. It varies, you know, from region to region depending on the programs and the emphasis. So it's, if we have a 10% cut, in, say an additional 10% cut in the general fund on top of the 10% that we've already had, it's not like a 10% total cut in our budget. Additionally, as I mentioned here in this report, the governor's proposed a one-day furlough, one-day per month furlough, which means don't work and don't get paid for it. That's roughly a 5% cut, and in addition to being a hardship for employees, it also means that there is less time to do the work that we need to do. I quantified that here, and that turns out to be about 3.2 PYs, believe it or not. One day a month for everybody is 3.2 PYs per year. And as with all things, we have to prioritize, and that's something that we'll have to continue to do to deal with that, to deal with the general fund cut we've already taken. We have a cut in the integrated waste management funds that we get from tipping fees, because those fees have gone down substantially thanks to recycling. And anyway, it all adds up to a fairly significant reduction in the staffing that we have available. So it just behooves us to continue to try to do the highest priority work. And we'll keep you posted as we learn more about anything that comes out of Sacramento budget-wise.
I think that's it. One thing I wanted to go over with you, I have a scheduling problem in the morning, and I have to appear in court in Chatsworth at 8:30, and I'm going to do so by phone. I'll just be in another room. I don't know when my matter is going to be heard, so Russ is going to chair, and looking over some of the things on our agenda, I see we're somewhat hamstrung because we have
between 8:30 and 9:30.
Some time certain. I think I'll be available by 9:30, but I don't know.
But there'll be a quorum.
There will be a quorum. I would like to participate certainly in the Salinas Stormwater Development Standard discussion and the two.
Well, but your uncontested state's after 9:30.
Yeah.
So you can't do anything with that till 9:30.
Yeah.
And the reason I did that was because the uncontested items consist of Hollister, and I was trying to allow for travel.
And of course, you had that enforcement item prior to that, which has now been settled. So
24 and 34 look like the two things that you can get off, you know, that you can deal with.
Well, if there's a problem with that, because if you're going to have a
No, those don't have to be after 9:30.
No.
Yeah, those are ones that can be done before 9:30.
Yeah, 24 and 30.
Okay, so let me get this
straight. So if I'm looking at this agenda, and I'm item 23, and I see that item 22 is going to be after 9:30, then I'm figuring I'm going to be after 9:30.
Well, that's number 23 is after 9:30 because it's on one of the.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. The number 24.
Right, but there's a thing that says
that it can be changed and
moved up.
If it doesn't specify a time.
Okay. I can see moving it back, but up is, I guess, I don't know.
Well, listen, you could also
just see how it works out.
Also, a public forum can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because that doesn't have a time certain.
About public forum, I had a few calls before the meeting from public asking for an approximate time.
Right.
And so I kind of told him sometime after 3, maybe.
Okay.
Oof. I would have said after 1.
Yeah, I said you can't count on it, but, you know, the way the agenda looked.
Well, we might be out of here by 3.
That would be nice.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Rob.
I am.
So, 34 and 24.
The other thing we can do on the public.
And if I'm not here, I'm not here. You just.
Well, it doesn't make any difference, but even if you were here, these are stated like Selena says 9:30.
Right.
The uncontested items are 9:30.
Right.
So.
We're kind of stuck anyway.
You're stuck.
And those other two are also like 9:45. So
10:30. Well, they're both related. Well, Sand City is going to take a little longer than that, probably, but we can do 24 and 34. And I was also, if those are handled quickly, then if there's anybody in the audience wants to address on the public forum,
sure.
I can take some of those. We can take some of those. And
do closed session first.
There is no. Is there a closed? Francis, is going to be a closed session tomorrow?
A teeny tiny one.
Well, can we do that? Early?
Yeah. I haven't even told Roger about it, so.
He knows now.
Yes. I'm a quick study.
Yeah.
On what item?
Well, there's just, a potential issue with the CEQA document that is not, may not be adequate.
How much time would you need?
Minutes.
Okay, well, that's a possibility. Well, let me ask you, do you want to do that now?
What about a dinner tonight?
We shouldn't do it now because Roger needs to check his emails, so we might have a message about a matter.
Okay. Well, we can do that shortly after.
Right.
If we have enough time after we do 24 and 34,
right, we can do that.
Then we can do that. Okay.
You got time?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So are we adjourning?
Yeah.
Is that what you're telling me?
Till tomorrow morning.
Let's not put any